Can you guess who it is today? It's kind of a little bit different than what we've been running on here. We did a Tom Petty tribute. We did AC/DC with Russ Lane. We've had a lot of fun. We'll talk about our guest here in a second, but hey, thanks for being here. This is another fantastic episode of Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and joining me is the vice president, the man that keeps his finger hovering over the master control button, the stats junkie, Mr. Jim Sexton.
Hello, hello.
Thanks for being here. And our special guest this week, the story you're going to hear is Mark Daniels Jr. Mark, you made a tedious trip in through ice-covered Alabama roads.
I did.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here. My first time to the headquarters here at Bassmaster. Pretty, pretty cool place. A lot of awesome pictures, some old school throwback stuff there in the lobby. Get your blood boiling, man.
Are you ready to go fishing?
I am, man. I'm ready to get it going.
It's that time of year. We're closing in. The to-do list is being tackled. It's getting crossed off item by item, but it's, you know, we're 3 weeks away from our first event on Lake Martin and the Classic after that. I mean, and you're going to the Classic.
I'm in the Classic, man.
You are in the Classic.
It's like I'm still pinching myself, man. I'm in it.
Mark was a rookie in 2017. Now, rookie by Bassmaster standards, but a guy that has been tournament fishing for a long time. A West Coast dude transplanted to Alabama, Tuskegee.
Tuskegee, Alabama.
You went to college there.
I did, yep. Tuskegee University, graduated in 2006. Now I'm back.
He's back. Well, you know, people have done that. Now, Jim has done what he normally does, and he has crunched your 2017 numbers, statistics, and they're actually pretty good. Not surprising,
yeah,
but they're pretty good. So take it away, Jim. What do you got for Mark?
Well, we got a lot. First of all, though, I want to remind us what town in California you grew up in.
Well, I was born and raised in Richmond, California, which is right there on the bay, East Bay, as we call it back home,
okay.
And then later moved to town called Fairfield, California.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. So your home, your fisheries out there that you tapped into kind of on a regular basis, what were they?
Man, I'm what they call a Delta rat.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We know a few of other ones of those guys.
There's a couple of us running around on the Elite Series. Yeah.
Really cool.
Do you feel that fishery really prepared you for everything? I've heard it can be really difficult, but it can be great.
Man, it's a gift and a curse, man. You know, it's obviously shallow water. Fishery, tidal system, a lot of aquatic vegetation, a power fisherman's dream,
mm-hmm.
which is beautiful because a lot of places we go is just that. But
mm-hmm.
the finesse game, the offshore game, the electronic game, that's something that has to develop over time for a person that's spent most of their time on the California Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, well, let's jump in. I'm excited to have Mark in here. I first met you, it was at an industry event. It was at a rattle trap event out in Oklahoma. Gosh, that was probably 2014 or 2015. It was before you joined the Elites, and I remember sitting at a dinner table across from you and thinking, man, I hope this guy makes the Elites because he's a great guy. I was really,
that's awesome.
Really impressed. And here we are, beginning of 2018. And you're getting ready to start your second season on the Elite Series. So let's go through your numbers from last year. Well, first of all, your total number of tournaments in the Bassmaster world, 16 tournaments.
16.
Here he's finished 1 year on the Elites, and he still really only has 16 tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
Looking back at that, you did Northern Opens in 2014, so that was three tournaments, and then you did the Southern Opens in 16, that was another three tournaments, plus 10 Elite tournaments.
That's right.
So that's it. The man has 16, I mean, he literally had six tournaments before he made the Elites.
Kind of makes him sound like a baby fisherman, but really, he had a pretty distinguished career with fishing in the FLW
he did. And
he's not just getting a start.
No, he sure did, and I looked back at that in the FLW world, a couple of basic questions for you. First, what year would you consider that you became a professional angler?
Definitely 2014.
2014.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
All right, 2014, and you competed on the FLW Tour 14, 15, and 16.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So total number of tournaments at FLW 46 tournaments. You got two wins there. You got 10 top 10s.
Oh, the hair's starting to stand up on the back of my neck. It's starting to get, you know, a little tougher now.
Yeah, yeah. And and he had 3 cup appearances over there.
Yep.
Total of $418,000 in earnings, winnings on the FLW circuit. So you came in right under the wire in terms of being considered a rookie.
I think
if you'd made over $500,000 in another circuit, you're not a rookie officially. So you squeaked in there, made some good dough there, and then came on to the elites for 2017. And so here's the rundown of where you finished in 2014. And if you tell us a little bit about each one of these, that'd be a great way to start
for
out.
Sure.
First tournament last year on the elites was Cherokee. You finished 40th.
Yeah, Cherokee, man, a very interesting place. Upland Reservoir, clear water, smallmouth dominated fishery. You know, I was a little worried about that one. You know, I had an opportunity to go up to Cherokee and do some pre-practicing. And, of course, the word on the street, talking to anybody that knew had any knowledge of the lake, it was all about that D'Amici rig, vertical, crappie fishing for smallmouth, man. And I tried it, 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 and I could not get it to work. And it wasn't so much, you know, I caught a few fish doing it, don't get me wrong, but I didn't feel like this is the deal that I'm going to do to cash a check or win this tournament. And so I kind of had to go back to my basics, fish my strengths and my guts and my comfort zone. And so I opted to fish off-colored water, although it was extremely cold, and we had snow on the first day. I opted to fish for largemouth. And I predominantly cranked pretty much that whole week, and I caught everything that I weighed in that week on a crankbait, you know, and totally different from the vast majority of the guys were doing, but that's what worked for me, you know, and that's what I had to roll with, you know, gut instinct.
Yeah, we heard that from several of the guys. It's be you, you know, do what you got to do, and a lot of them will come off a tough season and say, I kind of went with the crowd on a certain technique, and it bit me. And then when I said, screw it, I'm going to do my own thing, they went back and just hammered them. So there's something to be said for that. And you made that decision before the tournament started.
Well, you know, but, you know, don't get me wrong. I continued to try that D'Amici rig. Mm-hmm. So I said all that, and it was funny. I laugh at it now. I think I wasted, I'm going to call it wasted because I never caught one. I think I wasted an hour each day trying to find those deep fish because I did catch a really big one. And practice doing it. So I was like, man, I, you know, there's that, you know, that opportunity. That I'm just maybe I might luck up and catch one. And it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So
that's the way that goes.
All right. So we move on to tournament number two, elite number two, Okeechobee. You finished 65th there. But let me also say, at Cherokee, you did make a check. You finished 40th. Even though you had that little, you know, time waster with the D'Amici rig. You finished 40th, respectable start on the Elite Series, making a check, which is, you know, an awesome way to begin in this new series for you. All right, second tournament, Okeechobee, finished 65th.
Okeechobee, man, that was the one. That was the one that I was looking most forward to. I've fished, I think, 3 or 4 tournaments prior on Okeechobee between FLW Tour events and Costa events. And that lake, in my opinion, the way to sum it up for somebody that's never been there or for my West Coast guys, you know, to me, it's a California Delta without a tide.
Nah.
Full of grass, off-colored water in areas, clear water in areas, you know, tules, as we call them at home, reeds, all sorts of aquatic vegetation. I just feel right at home at Okeechobee. And I've had success there in the past as well, so I was really looking forward to it. But, you know, it's fishing, and it just did not pan out, man. I just could not, you know, right the ship. I had a decent start. Not one. I think I had 15 pounds on the first day. I was in like 33rd or something like that. And the fish that I was fishing literally disappeared the second day. And I tried them and I tried them and I tried them. Couldn't get them to go. So then I started running around. The wheel started turning. And I ended up coming in with 9 pounds on the second day. And it just didn't work out.
Well, you know, even
it happens.
Even as a tough finish, you look at the whole field. You look at the number of anglers. 65th is not, you know, if you're going to crash and that's your worst one or one of your worst ones,
sure.
That's not a bad one to have as
that's
a tough
the,
tournament.
That's the tournament where Brandon Palahniuk finished,
I think, 100.
104 or something like that.
Sure,
so,
it happens, man.
Yeah, it does. All right, your third tournament was Toledo Bend, and you came back, finished 28th at Toledo Bend.
Yeah.
And made another check. How'd that one go for you?
Toledo Bend, you know, I had never been there before. So really quick, just another little side stat. 5 of the lakes on the Elite Series schedule from last year I had never been to.
Wow.
Toledo Bend was one of them. So I carried myself over there and did some pre-practicing and some scouting. Oddly enough, even with the 28-day off-limit period, one of the areas that I found in pre-practice really came into play, and I caught the vast majority of my fish on day two. I think I had like 17 pounds. I found it in pre-practice. So there's something to be said about work ethic and putting in that extra time trying to scout these places. But I caught them there. You know, we got there around the time of, I would call it pre-spawn, post-spawn. The vast majority of fish were kind of right there. One of the areas I was fishing was Housing Bay, and that place was just getting absolutely pummeled, man. I never seen that many boats in one area in my life. I mean, we're talking from local guys to tournament guys. It was just getting beat down. And so I had to figure something else out. I fished it on day one, caught me 12 pounds. I didn't even look to see what place I was in because I knew it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. You know, I was definitely outside of check range. And second day, man, I just calmed down, and I fished the area that I'm talking about that I found in pre-practice, and I ended up catching them on a Carolina rig, which is really hard to throw when you're behind the eight ball and you're not where you want to be. It's a very slow, painful technique, but it catches quality fish, mm-hmm. man. And so I was able to pick that Carolina rig up and catch me 17 pounds and jump all the way up, I think, to like 30th after that.
Wow.
And so that really helped me out.
Nice. Very good. Yeah. All right. Then we moved to Elite number four. That was Ross Barnett in Mississippi. You finished 39th there. Another check.
Yeah, another good event. Ross Barnett, another grass-style fishery with a lot of wood, a lot of stumps. Just, it fishes towards my strength, man. I caught my fish there frogging, which is something I've been throwing my entire life growing up on the California Delta. Caught a lot of fish on frogs there. And then I flipped some, too. And so that one was really lined up. You know, kind of, I would call it in my wheelhouse. I didn't knock it out the park like I had wanted to, but nevertheless, 39th is a decent finish, and anytime you can take some good points away fishing against this crowd, it's a good derby.
Yeah, absolutely. Lead number five over to Texas. That was on Sam Rayburn, the big Texas Fest event, and you finished 25th there, your highest finish to date, 25th at Sam Rayburn.
Yeah, that was probably the funnest event. Because I caught every single fish. I needed one rod. I just needed my 7.5-foot Kessler.
Fear a man that keeps one rod on his boat deck at takeoff. You know he's on to something.
Oh, man, and a flipping bait. And that is all I did. I weighed in 15 bass, probably caught 60 bass, 70 bass in the course of 3 days, flipping soft plastics and jigs around flooded bushes. And, I mean, it just don't get no better than that for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I loved every minute of it, man.
They say that lake is the jig and big worm fisherman's paradise, especially about the time we were there. It's just great for that. And if you like to throw a crankbait, you can catch them on that. Mm-hmm. I watched Randy Howell catch them on a jerkbait. It just had a little bit of everything. But
great tournament. So you're on a roll at that point. You got three checks in a row. Go to Dardanelle in Arkansas. Yep. I remember that one being kind of flooded out.
Yeah, it was a tough tournament.
A little bit of a concern whether we would delay it or pause it, you know, not do the tournament there. Anyway, we ended up doing it just on time. So Dardanelle, you continue your streak. You finished 28th at Dardanelle, fourth check in a row.
Yeah, Dardanelle, man. I didn't get a chance. That was the one lake that I had never been to that I didn't get a chance to pre-practice.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So I get out there during official practice, and I find these fish in that water willow. Very, very popular, common thing to do over on Lake Dardanelle is swim jigs, throw buzz baits, frogs, things like that through that water willow, which is a grass that grows along the banks for people that have never seen it. But and that was going kind of good. I was getting some bites doing that. I was a little excited. I'm like, all right, this might work. A little shad spawn going on. I might be able to snatch me a couple doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, second day of practice, I noticed the water's down about 6 inches. I'm like, man, that's weird. And I didn't know that it would fluctuate like that because everything that I had been told at that point, it was flooding. So I'm like, the water's going to stay hot.
Yeah.
So then the third day of practice come down. Now it's down like a foot. I'm like, man, what's going on? So now I'm rolling to these areas where I have been catching them in this grass. And now the grass is like laying flat on the water.
Yeah.
It's like a foot shallower. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this probably ain't going to work. But of course, me being a hard-headed bass fisherman, I run right over there first thing in the morning in the tournament.
Got to try it.
Got to try it. Ain't a fish to be found.
Yeah.
And so I really struggled that first day, man. I caught 9 pounds. I caught exactly 5 keeper bass that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they came on 5 different baits. I mean, it was like a junk fishing deal. And I was in like 100th, man. It was bad.
Mm.
And I knew I had to do something different. And one of the areas that I had scouted, but I didn't really find much, but it was appealing to the eye, and it had all the right stuff in that area, was in Shoal Creek. And so I said, you know what, I'm just going to roll in Shoal Creek, and I'm going to fish. And man, and I end up catching a couple I caught a 5-pounder on a buzz bait, which was odd. I pulled my flipping stick out. I flipped up a couple solid ones, you know, 2 3/4. Anyways, catch me 14 pounds and jump all the way into 44th and make that third day cut.
Hmm. Yeah, and then you moved up from there to 28th.
Yep.
So successful tournament for
it
you.
It was,
you know, you adjusted as it went along, and that's always impressive.
That's the way that whole tournament seemed to go. I mean, I was,
sure. Yeah.
With the exception of Steve Kennedy and Mark Davis, who were anchored down in these teeny little spots,
mm-hmm.
Everybody was just rolling.
Figuring it out.
The boat moving, cast, change baits. It was, I mean, we were baffled by it. Had no idea how it was going to go down.
Yeah, that's great. So after that, we head up north. We got a little break, and then we head up north to St. Lawrence. And as you know well, the next four tournaments are going to be up north. And, you know, traditional smallmouth fisheries. So
Looks like you were still on break for a couple of those tournaments.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wondering here. Maybe I didn't
make it to the event.
Yeah. So St. Lawrence on the St. Lawrence River, Waddington, New York, you finished 73rd, your lowest 73rd, finish
man.
Of the tournament, of the season to date.
Yeah, man, I really don't know what happened in that event. I'm still kind of baffled a little bit. Started out great. I had 18 and a half, almost 19 pounds the first day. I was in 30th, I think. And I just could not catch them the second day.
Yeah.
And every adjustment that I tried to make did not work. And then I had some goofy things go on that just kind of got the wheels turning. My first two bass that I put in live well, miraculously, somehow they die.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, it was just really weird. I'm like, what's going on? And, I mean, it just kind of put, like, a bad spin on things. I ran 5, 6, 7, 8 areas that I got bit in practice. I couldn't get bit. I just couldn't get bit. And I just couldn't figure it out where they went, and the wheels came off, man. And I just couldn't bounce back.
Yep. Well, it happens.
But we've talked about this. Like, if you're gonna have your bomb tournaments, if the wheels are gonna come off the bus, 60s and 70s is probably the place you kind of want.
You know, you're absolutely right. You know, you're not
better than 100.
Absolutely.
You're not 90s and 100
sure.
kind of thing.
And
so you haven't derailed your season at this point.
Right. But, you know, it's you don't want to start that. Because,
you
said, it's like the prior four tournaments, you know, you've been decent. You've been in the top 50, cut checks.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep that momentum going, you know. And now we're going up north, which – if I just had to pick a few tournaments, I would say the northern tournaments are going to be my weaknesses, mm-hmm. right? And so now we're going north for smallmouth that I have the least amount of experience with.
Yeah.
And here you go walking towards the cliff. You don't need to be walking towards the cliff right now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You need to be climbing the hill. So that kind of started going downhill.
Yeah. So next back-to-back then with Champlain,
mm-hmm.
and which is over on the New York-Vermont border. We move
mm-hmm.
east.
Mm-hmm.
And Champlain, man, you're right. That hill was happening for you, and you went downhill just a little bit. You finished 76th at Champlain.
Champlain, man. Absolutely love that lake. One of the best lakes in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Love that lake.
Had you fished it before?
I had, and I've done well at Champlain several times. Well, two other times, let me say that for sure. And I was really looking forward to Champlain just because it's a heck of a fishery. I made a mistake on day one at Champlain that cost me making that 50 cut, hands down. In years past, I have done really well down on the south end of the lake in Ticonderoga, which sets up to my strengths, a lot of grass,
mm-hmm.
a lot of frogging, a lot of flipping, things that I like to do. I'm very comfortable. And the quality of the fish down there, when it's right, can be very rewarding. You know, we're talking 3.5 to 5 pound class bass. I went down there and had really a horrible practice in Ticonderoga. But I had this one area that I had found where I had probably 15 to 17 bites in about a 30-minute period. And I didn't stick any of them. I shook them all off because I'm like, I don't want to hurt these fish. So I'm sitting at home or in my hotel room trying to figure out, am I going to make this run? Am I going to make this run? Mind you, I had found some smallmouth up north as well, okay, that I felt like I could catch 14 to 16 pounds, you know. Not a home run, but a solid bag. So I'm sitting there trying to weigh all this out. And I go, you know what? No, I'm feeling it. I got that gut feeling. I'm going to roll with my instincts. I said, you need to run down south. There ain't going to be many guys that make that run. You need to go down there and try to crack a big bag and really make a statement on day one. Well, we run all the way down there. We get there, we start fishing, and every single one of those bites, with the exception of like five or six smaller bass, were pike.
Oh, you think they were pike in practice?
Critter. I didn't know it because I wasn't setting a hook on them.
Yeah.
I caught, I think, 26 pike that day.
Wow.
it was the biggest. And when you run down, that's a commitment, too. When you run a tie, you're fishing tie.
How long did that take you to get down there?
It's well over an hour. It's about 75 miles to the area that I was running to, and we had some rough water that morning.
Right.
So it took me about an hour, probably 15, hour 20 to get down there. Yeah.
So,
now, there's something I want to talk about here. So, at this point in the season, as the digital editorial side of producing coverage, we're starting to watch. We're watching AOI all year, but this is a point where the rookies tend to separate themselves.
Absolutely.
And we had been paying attention to this, and I feel like it's at St. Lawrence. I feel like we had a conversation before that. Like, Mark Daniels is in the run here. Like, there's definitely some stuff going on. We had Jamie Hartman. We had Dustin Cannell. And you guys were pretty close, and it had bounced around back and forth a little bit, and we were paying attention. And then I remember, I don't even think we talked about it, coming into St. Clair, like, we had a couple bad tournaments. You know, this is going to come down to Jamie Hartman, right? We figured this was going to be his baby.
North.
And we were watching it close thinking, man, something's going to have to change. And then St. Clair happened, which I spent a day with you on St. Clair shooting pictures, and you were just pounding them. And this is a great tournament for you. Talk about how did you put the wheels back on the bus at that point? I know.
Yeah, so you got two tournaments, 73 and 76 up north, and then we move over to Michigan, and it's like, all right, we're starting to go, all right, maybe the dude is not cutting it up north.
It was do or die time,
though. You go to St. Clair.
Mm-hmm. Do or die for me, man. I'm 36th in points.
You're on the goal.
Okay, total.
Going in St. Clair, too. Stress level was at an all-time high because we're only taking 35 to the Classic, right?
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, in the beginning of the year, I set out, I want to make the Bassmasters Classic, period. That's what I want to do. That is my biggest goal right now. And here I am on the bubble, you know, another foot on a banana peel, going into St. Clair, a place where I've been one time prior, and I finished like in 100th in a Bass Open, right? So I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. But I know it's do or die time. And anyways, I just really practiced really hard. And I fished really relaxed and comfortable in that event. I had located some fish on the Canadian side of St. Clair itself. And I wasn't getting a ton of bites, but when I would get one, they were, you know, three and three quarter to 4 1/4 pounds, seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, these are the ones that need to be weighed in, you know. But you never really know what you got in practice because you don't put that much pressure on them. You just kind of sample the product, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't really want to lean on them too hard.
Did you stick a few fish to see what they were?
I did. I caught a couple. I certainly did. I caught a couple, and then I did a lot of idling and looking with my Garmins, you know, just to kind of see what was down there and kind of see if I could, you know, find some open areas amongst the grass and things like that, and little high percentage points. And I did some of that as well, but I did sample what was out there, and I caught a few 4-pounders in practice, and I was like, yeah, these are the ones we need. And went out there in a tournament. Cool little quick story I'll tell you guys. I fished a buddy tournament here on Lay Lake with Clint Davis, buddy of mine's, and he gave me a crankbait. And he was like, this is what we're using to catch spotted bass. I never took the crankbait off. It's been sitting in my rod locker for like two and a half months. And so then we get out on St. Clair, and I'm like, I want to throw a deep diver. Well, I open my box, I already got one tied on. And I'm like, I don't really know about this crankbait. You know, I've never used it before, really. And man, I fired that thing out. I want to say second cast, 4-pounder.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, take a couple pictures, let it go. Mosey on down the way, 4-pounder. My new favorite crankbait.
Yeah.
All right?
Thank you, Clint.
Keep that thing tied on.
Exactly, man. So long story short, man, I end up fishing that area in tournament and making these, I call them transects, these drifts. You know, I'd run up and I'd drift a half mile to a mile. Then I'd run up and I'd move over a quarter mile north east or west of my last drift. And then I make it again. And I was just fan casting, making these quarter casts. And every 10 to 30 minutes, you run across one of those active, big, rogue smallmouth.
Yeah. And you said you were on the Canadian side. Were you straight across from the launch area?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
More or less. I was near what they call the Bell River Hump.
Yeah, yeah.
Very popular area on the lake.
It's actually pretty similar. I think that might be where Faircloth won.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Over in that area.
Mm-hmm.
There were several guys over there, and it's such a big area that, you know, there were a few. I was on Brandon Palahniuk for a little while, and he was over in that area.
Yeah. The only person I saw, and I didn't know was him until we talked about it after, was Matt Lee.
Oh.
But I could see him, but he was a every bit of a mile and a half away from me, you know.
So we kind of buried the lead. Mark Daniels Jr. finished third in that tournament. So let's see. Jason Christie won it. Who came in second?
Brock Mosley.
Brock Mosley's second.
Second in a row.
Yep.
That's right. Came in third. Was Jordan Lee fourth, fifth? Jordan and Matt both finished high.
I think side by side, didn't
fourth
they?
Fourth and fifth.
Yeah. So, really, it's so interesting to me that, you know, you go up to this famous northern fishery and a guy from Oklahoma wins it, and guys who live down south come in second, third, fourth, fifth.
I know, it's weird.
So it's just so interesting. So, all right, you're on a roll now. You've had your two tough tournaments.
Now Mark Daniels has been a pretty hot topic in between
St.
Clair
right.
and Mille Lacs. We're like, man, this guy pulled it together.
He got a lot of attention at that tournament impressed everybody. And then we go up to Minnesota for the Angler of the Year Championship on Mille Lacs in Minnesota. And how'd that one go for you?
Oh, I ended up finishing 10th. You know, I had a great event, and I just didn't know what to think, man. Of course, you hear it's one of the best fisheries in the nation. You hear that from everybody. But I've heard that about a lot of lakes, and then, you know, you go there, and it's like, you should have been here a week before.
That's right.
You should have been here in two more weeks. It's
right,
like,
always.
Always. I'm like, dude, I'm here now. Like, I got to figure it out now. So I just didn't really know what to expect, man. Of course, Fighter kind of gave up some tips and secrets last year. Everybody watched that film and kind of saw how he caught him. And I knew that sort of thing would get beat up bad because everybody's going to be looking for those isolated boulders, you know. And so I opted to fish a little shallower, not necessarily on the bank, but I was in that 3 to 8 foot range. And what I found was it seemed like those smallmouth were push bait up on these short, shallow points in the morning, and you had a window opportunity to about 9:30 in the morning. And so I was just firing a swim bait around in the mornings, man, and a chatter bait, and really took advantage of that first couple hours. And I'd say in the first 2 hours each day, I had over 20 pounds.
Wow.
You know, it was just super
fun. Now that's impressive. But on Mille Lacs, you need more than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It was like 20's cool, you know. But so I ended with 23 the first day, actually. I caught two big ones late in the day off of isolated rocks that I had found in practice. And, you know, and then the next 2 days, I had 21 and 21, which are phenomenal bags of fish. But again, on Mille Lacs, you got to step your game up a little bit.
Anyway, you had a great tournament. I finished 10th.
Yep.
And what that did for the year for you, you finished 18th in AOI in your rookie season on the Elite Series. And so a very impressive finish. In terms of, so it's 10 tournaments there, the nine regular elites and then plus the AOI championship. So 10 tournaments. And out of those 10 tournaments, you made checks in 7 tournaments.
Nice.
You know, AOI is a little different in terms of the check structure, but but still, if we count you,
count it.
We like to count, man.
Thank you.
Count
so it. 7 out of 10 tournaments you made checks. So that's a 70% in the money percentage. Not bad. If you look at your total Bassmaster career, which is 16 tournaments, you've made checks in 10 out of 16, which is 62%. So.
That's a good percentage.
Those are really strong percentages.
I like that. I've never looked at it like that. It's funny.
Yeah. No, it's good. And we typically average out your AOI finishes, but since it's 1 year,
your AOI finish is, what did we say, 20-something?
Your average is 18.
18,
so,
yeah.
That's good.
You're doing really well there. So what that does for you, Mark, is you're in your first Classic. Made 3 Forcewood Cups, and now in your first full season in the Elites, you make the Bassmaster Classic coming up in March.
Yeah. Man, I don't even have words to really even explain the feeling, man. You know, it's something that I have been looking forward to my entire life, is the best way to sum it up. I just remember being a kid, man, watching it on TV, making my mom wake me up on them Saturday mornings. Mom, got to get me up at 6 because Bassmasters is coming on. Mm-hmm. I got to watch that. You know, I'm like 5, 6 years old, but I'm just eating up with fishing in general at that time. And it was, you know, that was on television on Saturday mornings that sparked my interest. And to fast forward, you know, 30 years and to be walking into my first Bassmasters Classic, man, it's just, it's surreal, man. It really is. But it's also, you know, a testament to, I think, you know, in my opinion, you know, dedication and hard work too, man, because this is something I never gave up on, man. There was chances in life that I didn't have to try to become a professional angler, man, but it was burning so deep inside, I just continued to push forward, you know, and try to make it happen. And then it did happen. I became a professional angler, and then it's like, okay, now I'm here. What's your next goals? And of course, being on the Bassmaster Elite Series was one of them. And then the mecca of bass fishing, the classic, man.
To make it to the classic through the elite qualification is arguably the toughest way to get there. So you didn't win an open and, you know, on your home lake and get an invite to the classic. You beat a number of, and I do words, not numbers.
Sure.
So a good number of professional anglers deemed to be the best in the world to earn your spot at the classic. So that's got to make it even better.
It really does, man. And not to mention the boost of confidence, because even at the elite level, you need that confidence, and sometimes you question your confidence, but you need that confidence to step out there on that boat and fish to your full potential. Mm-hmm. And to look back at the year and look at where I finished, and not to look at guys that I beat, because I'm not about that, but to look at guys that I know have been here several times before me and that have won classics and that have won many elite events and that are, as you just said, deemed to be the best in the world, mm-hmm. and to be amongst those names, that's a little bit of a confidence booster.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You finished the year awfully strong, you know, a third at St. Clair, a tenth at Mille Lacs. How does that set you up for going into the first elite, which is Lake Martin in a couple weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I want to keep the momentum rolling. You know, my last event was Mille Lacs. I finished 10th. My last two events, I had 2 top 10s. Let's keep the party going, you know? You know, I'm ready to jump out on Martin and have a strong event, you know. Who wouldn't like to win one, of course?
Well, I've got some bad news for you. We just received word. This just in, Trip Weldon has entered the first tournament of the year. Fishing on Lake Martin.
Listen, that's who we don't need in the tournament.
I'm just kidding. Trip is excited about that, but I'll tell you what. When that guy was talking about that and we got some of the stories, the side stories of Trip and his time there.
Oh, yeah.
There might not be an elite angler that could beat him on that lake.
Yeah, he knows that lake. Well,
it's not just Martin. There's a few lakes around here, Jordan and Mitchell. I mean, Tripp, man, I've done my little research too. Tripp knows what's up, man. He put a lot of fear in some of these guys' hearts.
If you don't know, everybody listening, Tripp Weldon is the Bassmaster tournament director. He is a guy that gets to stand next to Dave Mercer. He's the one catching fish as they flop out of the weigh bin and weigh bags, and he calms them down. But he is an exceptional angler in his own right, as most of us got into the sport because of our passion for the outdoors, which we're going to get to that in just a second. But we joke because we've said that before, is with Lake Martin in the horizon, everybody's like, no, do not put Trip on the water. He does not get a rod in his hands because that's a whole other check someone's going to take away.
Yeah, he usually stick there.
That's awesome.
I think we got our stats, so I really think it's time to go into Mark's sort of fishing story, which I think is really compelling. And
the compelling side of this is everybody we've had in here, when we're talking about angler stories, getting to know the man behind the jersey, the man who's inside that boat, there's a common link with everybody. And that's the people in their life that believed in them, supported them. Even those that thought your dream was crazy said, you need to get a real job, you know, do whatever. Right. That stuff all fuels you. And I want you to kind of walk me through the first day you knew this is what you wanted to do. And then, you know, kind of bring us to present. Talk about those people that are instrumental into where you're at. Because Jim, myself, Mark Daniels Jr., Justin Lucas has a great story, Randall Tharp, Matt Heron, Randy Howell, Matt Lee, the list goes on. They all had to overcome adversity. They all had to keep their nose to the grindstone and get to a point where they're successful. So,
yeah, no doubt, man. I mean, for me, you know, in 2013, the first little piece of or thought that I could become a professional angler was in 13. I had won my division in TBF, which is the Bass Federation, which is associated with FLW, but I won my division for California. I was the highest finishing guy from California, and now I make my first national championship, which I had never been to a national championship before. It's really, really hard competing, even at that grassroots level. Those guys are hammers, man. They absolutely can catch them, and I think the Federation Nation and TBF class anglers get kind of swept under the rug. You know, they don't get their due credit, I'd say, because these guys are, yeah, they work a 9-to-5, but they will bust your head on that water on the weekend, trust me. And so now, you know, I qualify for my first national championship, and, I mean, there's like 56 boats. I got a 1-in-56 chance shot of winning the tournament. You know, I'm like,
those are good odds.
I like my odds, you know, but I'm going to a lake that, I'm from California, man. I drive all the way out, me and my dad, to Grand Lake of the Cherokees in Oklahoma. Wow. And I'm like, this is super foreign, you know, like, I'm a Delta rat. All I know is tide swings and grass and all this, that, and the third, and Grand has none of that, you know, but it's certainly full of bass. But to kind of cut things shorter, you know, of course, I went on to win that event, man, and that was a life-changing event for me because that was the first true opportunity that I knew I was going to have to become, to see my dreams come true. You know, and so I went, I won that tournament. I came back home. I immediately went to my supervisor. I was working at the Solano County Department of Agriculture, you know, as an ag biologist, man. And I told her, her name was Linda. And I said, Linda, I said, I think that I'm not going to be working here much longer, you know. And everybody's, you know, they're like, oh, I don't, you know, you don't know and this and that. And I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm going to go for it, you know. You know, later that year, I end up quitting, you know, and starting this professional journey as an angler, something I've always dreamed of doing. And
now, winning that tournament, was that the one that where you earned the Living the Dream package?
Exactly.
And that comes with use of a truck, a wrap truck,
yep,
a boat, and entry fees.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so I really have to thank TBF, man. I really, really do, because they gave me the opportunity to become a professional angler through that program. I always wanted to do it. I never had the finances. I didn't have the resources. You know, we all know how expensive it is to do what we do. And without them, you know, I would never have this chance. And so I really want to stress that, you know, and tell them thanks, because they literally gave me the platform to pursue my dream. And now I'm living it, you know. And so, but that was the first time where I was like, I could be a professional angler. I could do this full time, you know, and that's when I jumped out here.
So you had graduated from college,
yeah,
and you had a degree in biology,
environmental science.
Environmental science,
yep.
And so what path were you headed toward before you? I mean, what did you want to do with that knowledge?
You know, I was kind of unsure, you know, exactly what field I wanted to work in. I was just one of those guys that, like all of us outdoorsmen, I was an outdoorsy guy. I didn't want to be in the office, man, stuck behind some computer punching numbers.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that. Hey, it doesn't always work out like that, but I didn't want to do that.
Give and take.
Exactly. So, you know, I graduated from school. I moved back home to California. My first job actually was after I graduated. Of course, you know, you feel like you got a degree. Like, oh, yeah, all these companies are going to want me. I'm getting ready to make $1 million and all this, right? Not reality check. I come home. You got zero experience. Take this job over at Frito-Lay. So I'm packing trucks with chips, man, after I graduate, you know, with a degree in environmental science. I'm like, man, this just ain't right. Well, anyways, the opportunity came up to be, at the time, it was an ag biologist trainee. And it was right up my alley. It was hands-on. It was out in the field. A lot of interaction with farmers, inspections, and just being outside. I'm like, yeah, that's where I need to be. And so that was more or less the path that I was on. I really enjoyed that job, you know, for a 9-to-5, having to clock in type of a gig. I didn't mind it at all, you know, but it was still, you had to be there for 8 hours, right? And at the end of the day, it just wasn't your passion. It wasn't what you really loved. And so when I weighed all that in and took all that in consideration, you know, the choice was clear, man, that I needed to, if nothing else, make a strong attempt at making this full time.
Tell me about the conversation you had with your boss. I want to know how that went.
It was like, well, you know, what's cool is everybody at my job knew how much, you know, I love to fish. And I can say this now, and if Linda hears this, she'll probably get a good laugh. But, you know, I would use all my sick time I'm on the water, man. You know, I hurl over underneath the console and be like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling too good today. I'm out there on the Delta, man. I'm pitching and flipping right now. But, you know, you can't tell them that. But everybody knew my passion. And I think deep down inside, they probably knew when I called in that that's what I was doing. But so when I came.
Nobody does that around here, Jim.
I know.
Nobody ever does that, right? Hunting season comes up and fish are biting. People get missing quick. Don't
people call in and you hear a gunshot in the background. And it's like, oh, you're homesick in bed, eh?
I got the War Chat History Channels on.
That was a lamp that just fell off the side table.
Oh man, that's hilarious. That was me, man. I'm right there with you guys.
But still, it's a the thing that I think we have to appreciate there. There's a big risk involved in that decision. You're going from...
You
see
how he's looking at me while he says that? He's like Thomas in the back of my mind.
No, I'm serious. Where you're on a a job with benefits probably.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
paid time off and all that kind of stuff. Yes. And so to make that leap, which at a younger age I think is an easier decision because you have less to lose in some ways. But still, that is a hard decision that'll... You know, basically all professional anglers make at some point where they take the less safe path to do this career.
I think without, and this goes in life, you know, I think without risk, there's no reward, you know, like reward just doesn't fall in your lap. You have to take chances, you know, with everything that you do. And I was willing to take that chance. But for me, that chance was a little more risky. Because I had already had a family, you know, wife, two kids. And so there was a lot more to consider than just I'm packing up my bags and I'm coming to Alabama and I'm going to be this hotshot fisherman. You know, I had a lot to consider. But, you know, I had that family support, man. You know, I wasn't getting flack for pursuing my dream. You know, I had this support system that really, really helps. And without that, I probably wouldn't have made it either. You know, and I packed up my entire family, moved to Alabama. I didn't have much money at all. When I say I didn't have much money at all, I mean I didn't have much money at all, okay? Came to Alabama, went and picked up my Living the Dream boat. You know, they paid my entry fee, so that wasn't an issue. But, you know, and then they also gave you expense money, but it wasn't a ton of money, but it was enough to get you out there a couple days practice and maybe get you a room, you know? But money was tight, man, and it was just it was really difficult at first.
I always wondered if you came back to Alabama because maybe your wife was from here.
That's exactly why. Yeah,
just kind of a guess.
Yeah, no, she's from Tuskegee, Alabama.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
And so that's where we moved back. And so you know she has that support system with the kids and everything while I'm out pursuing my dream and doing that. And that goes back to what I was saying before, that support system that just you know. If she didn't believe in me and support me in this, you know, things could be a lot different right now. And so moving to Alabama, Tuskegee, more specifically, was a good move for me. And so while I'm out on the road, I'm comfortable, you know, and I'm not worried about things in the back of my mind. But
how old are your kids now?
Man, it's funny. My son's birthday was just yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's 15, actually. I got a high schooler now, man, which is crazy because that makes me makes me kind of old, man.
How old are you?
36. I'm 36.
Yeah. I'm 37. My son's 10.
Well, so I got a 10-year-old, like too.
All right, well, give me some advice when we're done here.
Oh, for
and
sure.
And your daughter is how old?
She's 10. Oh, my daughter's 10. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's interesting. A lot of people, and we talked to Matt Heron and Matt Lee and Justin Lucas.
Yeah.
Randy Howell, you know, these are Alabamians, and we've asked them, why Alabama? What makes Alabama such a state to produce these bass hammers? And it's the versatility of the waters, the lakes, the pressure. You know, anybody that can do well here can do well about anywhere. But did you think about that when you moved here, or was it moving here because of your wife's family?
Yeah, it was more of a more of a centralized location, more than anything.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I was just looking at, you know, you look at the travels. And you could put a 200-mile radius around Alabama, and you're going to hit a lot of tournaments. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
And so that I think that's why a lot of guys come here, too. But, yeah, you know, her family being from Tuskegee, of course, and I went to school in Tuskegee, and I was familiar with that area as well. It just made it easy, you know?
Did your father-in-law approve of your decision?
Of course. Yeah, of course not.
No, and that leads me to my next question, and this has been a good one. Is there somebody along the way that said, dude, you are crazy.
Yep.
You're insane. I want to hear about that.
Yeah, man.
You don't have to name names if it's incriminating.
Yeah, well, it's funny because a lot of times you get that kind of pushback from those that are closest to you.
And maybe you should, right?
And maybe you should. Situations? Yeah, in certain situations. Now, my mom and dad are my two biggest fans.
Yeah.
And they push me to pursue my dream more than anybody, you know. And so I'm not speaking of them. But I have other close family members that told me I was crazy. Like, because... And these are also people that don't fully understand the sport, so that makes it easy to stay.
Right.
And then also these are people that don't share the same passions that you share. And that makes it really easy for somebody to become a naysayer because they don't feel the way you feel. And so you can't have these sort of conversations with people like that. I've had to learn that the hard way.
That's true.
Yeah. And so, I've had people close to me. You know, you still hear it too. But I'm at a place in my life right now, you know, that I've never been before. And it's all positive, you know, and it's not necessarily financial, but it's peace of mind, you know, it's happiness, you know, it's a lot of things. And I've been really blessed and fortunate, man, in a short 4 years of being a full-time angler, and I wouldn't change any of it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, one thing then to follow up on that, so you've been a professional angler for 4 years.
Yeah, this is going to be my fifth season, right?
Your fifth season, so you're 36. So really, in some ways, as opposed to like a Dustin Connell or some of the other guys that came out of college programs and started being, you know, pursuing professional angling very early, you're a guy who really started later than some. Randall Tharpe is kind of in that same boat. And so's Matt Herron and a number of others. So, anything that does for you that perhaps gives you, I don't know, perspective or wisdom or...
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I was 32 when I turned quote-unquote professional, you know. But I think I had a better appreciation of life, man. You know, I had a real job. I had real bills. I had a family. I had hardships. I had ups and downs. I had people telling me don't do this, don't do that, what you should do. You know, and, you know, just in those life experience in general, I think all of that kind of stuff just makes you more mature and allows you to make better decisions in life. And so in that regard, I would say yes. But in the fishing game, still very green. You know, even at 32, fished a lot of tournaments, but very, very green in the grand scheme of things, becoming a national angler. There's a huge difference from being a regional guy or being a I fish only this one lake guy to jumping out on the scene and becoming now a national guy. That is a night and day difference.
Got to be a lot of satisfaction looking back and looking at the decisions you made, know that you chose right here, you chose right there, good decision here, good decision there. When you make those decisions, you have the level of passion that a pro angler needs to have to be consistent and to stay in the game. Is there something you wish you would have done differently in the past?
There's a lot of mistakes,
turning
man.
Points.
A lot of mistakes. You know, and that's just life.
Yeah.
And just being immature too. A lot of mistakes I've made, man. I can't even list them all. You know, I'm still making them, but you know, a lot of them that I was like, dang, that was stupid. You know, why'd I do that? But those create character, build character, and allow you to make wiser decisions in the future. And so in the same breath, I'm like, I would have done that different, but I kind of needed to learn that. Well, one of the things, and I don't mind sharing this, I'm very open with who I am. I don't have anything to hide, but when I was in my 20s, I had DUI, right? Driving under influence, young and stupid, right? But that's something I look back and go, dang, that was stupid. But guess what? That needed to happen because I could have killed somebody. Right, not even include myself, but somebody else,
right.
And that would have been such a bad deal.
You know, I think men in general, we learn best by making mistakes.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't want anybody else to tell us not to do that because you know you're too smart for that.
I'm a big boy.
I'm a man.
That's
right. I make my own decisions.
But I think we have a hard headedness that tends to make it so that we learn from our mistakes better than any other wisdom you might get from a. You know, a father or a...
And this is something we're going to have to learn, and maybe you can help me as your son's a little ahead of yours, how you can direct him to not take the same hardship the littered life that we did, and hopefully I can get my son to go to college and finish college and get a good job that pays the bills and not fish for a living. Although,
right.
although that would be a fun life to live.
For sure.
But it takes bad decisions. I think that's probably one of the best answers we've got on that, because you're right. You need to make those mistakes. You need to look back and say, I wished I'd have done it different, but thankful that it didn't kill me or anyone else, but I made a decision and have learned from that, because I could give you a long list of similar stupid decisions I've made.
Hey, to some degree, how you respond to those mistakes is what character is.
Right.
You know, if you can move past it and not let it define you.
Absolutely.
And learn from it, that's character.
Absolutely.
Here's a character builder for you, and this is going to hurt a little bit. You realize that you and myself are of the age that is about 5 years past retirement age of most professional athletes. Think about that.
Golly.
Like that's 32 to 33 is when most pros retire.
But see, that's what's cool about fishing, though.
Just get better.
You just age like wine.
Yeah, yeah. You're a young man in fishing.
That's right. Look at Ricky Klund, man. Hey,
there you go,
Ricky Klund. Let me tell you something. This was one of my best experiences from 2017. Cherokee, first tournament of the year. My first spot I pull up on. Right. Whoa, I'm doing 80. I get there. No, I was doing more like 70. We get there. I'm fishing a couple casts. I hear his boat. Sits down just on the other side of this pocket that I'm in. It's not a big pocket, but it's decent size. I look over, it's Rick Klund. See, stuff like that's what dreams are made of to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how I started my elite career. Pulling up on spot, right behind me, they go, Rick Klund.
Did you, were you so intimidated that you just like, you said, I got to move out of here so he didn't get mad at me?
No, because I was there first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I got you.
He's still going to stand his ground.
Nice. Yeah, I wasn't going to, but he was doing something totally different. He was doing his own thing. But, it was just cool to glance back, and I was like, more or less, I found the same area, or I'm sharing an area with Rick Klund. I mean, that was just a trip.
That's confidence.
Wow.
Very much so confidence, but it was more like, it was like a fan moment, though, at the same time. Because I'm on the water, but then that's like,
Rick, yeah, right. Just have my hat, right. I'll cast it over to you, anything.
Exactly. That's what I was kind of thinking, man. I was like, man, look at Rick. That's awesome.
So I appreciate making it to this level no matter how you do it. I know what it takes. If you're fresh out of college and you fished a college series, you've done all this, you know, you've earned your spot here, right? And there's different routes to fish on this level. And I personally took the hard route in life. And so I appreciate a guy that you know, went to college, had a job, started your family, and then ventured out, took the risk, and here you sit. That's a great story. That's really like the blue collar what was the
working it the hard way.
Living your life or living your dreams. I mean, that's it. But still, there's life lessons that you can pass on to any young angler that's going to take either route, but he's thinking about it. Right now, there are kids, you know, my son is in tune to the Elite Series as a fan, partially because of what his daddy does.
Sure.
But on the other side of it, there's kids that age anyways that are looking at this, and they're setting that dream earlier than maybe you and I did. Like, they see that as a potential career path. So talking to those kids, talking to the kids going into college that are possibly preparing to chase their dream, it's going to be harder than ever for people to make it to this level.
Yeah.
Give me some advice. Give them some advice. What would you say to them, those who are looking to live this life?
Yeah, for the really young kids, you know, 10 and upward, you know, it sounds really cliche, but the whole follow your dream thing, and that's something that I'm going to really start, you know, talking about more, and you'll see me hashtagging that. Follow your dreams, because it's saying so much in those three words, man. And it's so easy to get derailed or debunked off what you – set your mind to because of what somebody else said or what they think is better for you or what was better for them and their experiences and this, that, and the third. You can do anything you want to do, literally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's mind over matter. And so, I talk to so many high school kids and junior high school kids through my social channels. They always hit me up with questions. They always want questions and tips and all. And
how to get sponsors.
And I try – how to get sponsors. And I try my best to entertain a lot of them. But that's something that I don't always get an opportunity to message them. But I don't want them to be broken down by people telling them what they can and can't do or telling them no, you know. Stay true to who you are, and if that's what you want to do, literally go get it. Literally follow that path, you know?
Our first inside Bassmaster story was with Justin Lucas, sitting right where you were, and his story is a fantastic one. It's similar to yours, but he said something that actually turned into a little viral thing that went across our social platforms. Mm-hmm. His, and he talked about why it's important, above all else, if you want to be in this game, to just go fishing.
Man. He said a mouthful there, too. And I got a lot of respect for Justin Lucas. Of course, us being both two West Coasters, man, I remember competing with and against Justin in the TBFs and the FLWs and just everything, man. And, yeah, he has an awesome story. Heck of a guy. Man, that is the truth, man. Kids are so impersonable, and they want to be like us professional anglers so bad. They see us with sponsors, they want sponsors. Mm-hmm. They see us with new boats, they want new boats. And that's natural, and they should, but at the end of the day, if you can't catch fish, man, you're gonna be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you got to be able to catch fish. So I, you know, another thing which Justin made it very clear, and I remember when that went viral, you need to work on your game
mm-hmm.
more than trying to obtain sponsors right now, because really, at your early age in life, you don't have anything to offer a potential partner that is going to benefit them where they're going to have return on that investment.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, be caught up and ate up with catching fish. Learn how to become a great angler. And then as you mature and get older, sponsorships and things of that nature becomes more of a topic. But right now, you need to really hone in on your skills, you know, and fine-tune your craft.
Keep that passion going.
Right. Yeah,
because that's why we're in this.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. man.
You know, I was it's been a couple of years, and he's even aged some since then, but I accidentally ended up in the elevator with Kevin Van Dam at the Louisiana Classic.
Nice.
And it was just he and I.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, do I say anything or no? I don't want to be perceived as a fan. And I didn't say anything. And he goes, he knew I was on the water at the event covering things. I had the media badge, the whole thing. He's like,
this was before you were at Bassmaster.
Before Bassmaster. Yeah. This was back in my, even before North American Fisherman days.
Okay.
I was a freelancer.
Yep. Nice.
And he goes, are you tired as hell yet? And I said, I looked at him. I said, yeah, but I've been here 2 days. And I said, are you? He goes, I love this. And he had this growl, this look. And it, the thing of it is he still has that.
Yeah.
As long as he's been in this 50 years old here 50 recently.
Now. He's 50 years old.
Kids are about ready to go to college or in whatever. Like he's living.
They're like sophomores.
Sophomores
think,
in college.
Wow.
So he's lived this since he was a late teenager, early 20s, you know, and the GOAT, the greatest of all time, still has that drive to go out and beat everybody on the water.
Absolutely.
How do you keep that going?
Man, it's, you know, it's the passion, like you said. This is what we love to do. Mm-hmm. Over, you know, when you speak about passion, sometimes people have different ways of explaining it. And to me, this is how I look at it. Okay, Mark. You can do one thing in the world out of all the things you know of. What's the one thing that you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I sit back and I think about it. And in about 30 seconds, I'm like, I want to be a professional angler. Bass angler,
Furthermore.
And that's what's inside of Kevin boiling at its boiling point 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Constantly.
It doesn't change. And I'm no different. Of course, I'm a rookie and I don't have the accolades that he does, but it's burning in me the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps you going. That's what gets you up in the morning when it's 10 degrees outside.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, fire the truck up, start that 250 up, and run down the lake when it's 20 degrees, freezing. Mm-hmm. Who wants to do that? That's crazy, right?
So, you got to love it.
You got to love it.
So in terms of getting better for the 2018 season, what are you doing? I heard a little bit. I met a guy yesterday who does some work with you.
Okay.
On video, and I don't remember his name now. But
Philip.
Yes, that's
Philip
yesterday.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about you. I told him you were coming in, and he mentioned some dietary changes.
Absolutely.
and working out.
Absolutely.
So what are you doing on those fronts?
Yeah, so really quick, man. When I came off season at the end of this year, we talked about my season. When I got home from Mille Lacs, okay, I was the biggest I've ever been in my entire life, okay? Now, I'm 5'7", for those that have never met me, and I've always been a very thin guy, skinny, more or less. And I was 189.8 on the scale when I got home. And I was like, oh, my God. I got to get this weight off me. I look hideous in the mirror when I get up in the morning, right? I feel slow and sluggish, and I'm struggling tying my shoe, man.
Mark, there ain't no diet for ugly. I'm telling you.
There ain't no diet. You're right about that. Hey, look, I just wake up.
I'm on the same diet, bro.
That's natural. But man, yeah. So I was just unhealthy and uncomfortable, man, in my own skin, and it was a bad feeling, to be honest. And I'm an ex-athlete. I played baseball for a really long time, and you know, I was in shape a lot of my life, and I just kind of let myself go because I've been so focused on this fishing thing. But you know, I'm at a point now where I want to rebuild myself internally,
mm-hmm.
outward, you know. And so I've made some tremendous health changes as far as diet, like you mentioned, and then I'm in the gym, like, man, when I'm home 4 days a week, mm-hmm. you know. And I have a guy that I work out with that really pushes me, helps me get to where I'm at. And man, I've lost 20 pounds since I got home from Mille Lacs. Believe mm-hmm. it or not, 20 pounds on my little body, mm-hmm. right? Lost that. Man, I feel lighter on my feet. You know, I just feel so much better, man, from the inside out. I've also, from a diet standpoint, you know, I've cut a lot of things out of my diet. So I really have taken a big chill on dairy and meat, man. You know, I still tinker with a little fish here and there, but you know, I've taken back on a lot of that stuff, increased my vegetable intake a lot, my water intake a lot, and the difference is, man, without a shadow of a doubt, it's second to none. I just feel like a different person.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So going back out on the road here very soon, what's your plan? Because I got to think, you know, the weight gain that you had, but, you know, that's a lot of that's eating out of gas stations.
Oh, man, that's fast food.
Fast food.
That's getting off the leg, having a couple brewskis. You know what I mean? That's just being honest. You know, it's, you know, relaxing, not doing nothing. In your downtime, you're sleeping or you're watching TV or you're on your phone, you know, not being active.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm active. Now I'm not sitting around. I'm pushing myself. I'm eating better. So it's and it also brings mental clarity, mm-hmm. and mental toughness, man. Because I gotta tell you, cutting out those certain things out of your diet, that's one of the toughest things a man could ever do. And so I believe that's gonna help me on the water from a mental standpoint. Mm-hmm. So
to compete with the best. And you got to be at your best. And you look at some of these guys on the Elite Series. I don't know how many more of them are like Aaron Martin's in terms of his dietary and workout regime.
Right.
But there are some other guys who we hear stories about how hard they're working. In terms of taking care. Well, when Justin was in here, my gosh, he looked. I think he's on the same path.
Absolutely, yeah. Justin, man, John Cruz is another one. He works out a lot.
Yeah.
And watches what he eats. Polinic does as well. I mean, I think that's the only way you're going to see longevity, man, in the sport, because eating grits and biscuits and gravy, it's great, and it's awesome. It tastes well. Mm. You ain't going to be doing this for 40 years doing that.
Yeah.
Well, we're at that point in our life, Mark. We are no longer invincible. We're not too far apart in age, but it's taken a while for me to realize that. So we're about to wrap this up, but
sure.
You know, we've talked about sponsors. We've talked about the support system. You have some companies that stand behind you to make this work. Talk about those folks.
Yeah, man. First of all, without my sponsorships, I wouldn't even be here talking with you guys, man. Mm-hmm. I am really fortunate and blessed to be aligned with some of the, in my opinion, the best companies in this industry, without a shadow of a doubt. And, you know, it's not always about the money either. You know, the relationship is huge for me. And so the partners, you know, that I've built these relationships with, you know, we're able to understand each other and grow and keep me out here on the Bassmaster Elite Series. And so I really want to thank them. And, you know, my title sponsor, Bill Lewis Outdoors, man, those guys have been phenomenal with me since my start. So, you know, hats off to those guys. You know, Ranger Boats. Been running a Ranger my entire life. I had never had another boat, you know, and so certainly want to shout those guys out and thank them. Same with Mercury Marine, Garmin Electronics. Now here I go down the list, right?
Yeah, you got to have that in front of you.
I'm rambling. No, I'm just
right on your hand.
I can do this just off the dome. You know, Kistler Rods, great rod company made right here in the United States of America. Arguably one of the best rods you can put your hands on, in my opinion. Seaguar Fishing Line. Best fluorocarbon. Again, I've been blessed, man, to be with some of the best companies out there, man. Mm-hmm. Evolution Baits, they make a very cool, unique buzz bait that's been killing them out west for years, and now I'm unfortunately, guys, on tour, starting to starting to learn about it.
Well, that's the deal. When you get on the Elite Series, there are no more secrets.
No, right? Man.
We get people waving us off, like, get away. We don't want you taking pictures of what we're doing.
You get on Bassmaster Live a couple times. And
oh, that's it. You bet not catch a fish. Listen, you catch a fish on something on live, you can forget
everybody
about
knows
it.
Everything.
Yep. That's the way it goes. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being in here. It's been a lot of fun. You've got a great story, a lot of insight. And if people want to follow you on social media.
Yeah.
Where can they go?
All you got to do on all social platforms is type in my name, at Mark Daniels Jr. on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I got my YouTube channel starting to kick off. I'm starting to put up a lot more content there, so check me out there as well, at Mark Daniels Jr.
It's pretty easy.
Yeah. MDJ, one of the best little acronyms going on the Elite Series.
It is one of those right now.
Very memorable.
I like that. And you know what's funny? That's not even – so, you know, my buddies back home, my name is Mark Anthony Daniels Jr. So my friends always, for years, always called me M.A.D., right? And so then people started calling me just randomly M.D.J. And I was like, I kind of like that. It had a nice little ring to it.
Got a nice ring. Yeah.
The Madman.
Mm-hmm. The Madman.
Good to know. Good
we'll have to get Mercer to get on that nickname train. Hey, from Jim Sexton, Mark Daniels Jr., you've been listening to Inside Bassmaster. Appreciate it very much. If you download the show, if you like it, share it with your friends. Rate the show on iTunes. We really appreciate you being here, and we'll catch up with you next time.